Good evening. My name is Sheila Armstrong, and I'm an alcoholic. And I want to say thank you to Nick for, well, not picking me up and then picking me up at the airport. I got there, and nobody was there. And I thought, well, this is my life story. And but he was running lots of errands. He was picking up lots of speakers, and thank you very much. That was very kind of you to give me a lift here, and I want to thank Clancy and Shirali and the Powwow Committee for inviting me to be here. It's such an honor and a privilege, and Polly and Dave left me a message on my phone when I got here to welcome me, and you know, I just feel real overwhelmed to be here. There's so many people here that I've known since I was a kid, you know, and it's just been really neat to, I just feel like it's like a family reunion almost for me. And I'm a grateful alcoholic today. I wasn't always grateful to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're new and you're sitting in the back and you're not very grateful to be here and your sponsor drove and you don't have a way to get out of here, you know, and especially if you had to sit in the hump in the middle, I totally understand that. I've done that, and let me tell you what, you keep doing that, and you'll probably stay sober, and you'll probably get real happy. I just should start from the beginning. I suspect that's usually the best, and I want to thank whoever put together the basket in my room. Y'all put on quite a basket here. That's a big basket. I don't know. You know, I'm from Norman, Oklahoma. My home group is the Phoenix Group. It's at 227 West Main. If you happen to come, we're like on a storefront, you know, and people still, you know, they drive by, look at the alcoholics. And this one girl, she said, I don't know, I don't like that group because you're just right in the middle of Main Street. And I said, weren't you drunk in the Mont down on Main Street on the ground, you know? And I love what Babs Black says. You know, why do alcoholics want to be anonymous once they get sober? You know, it's like... We weren't very anonymous drunk, but anyway, so if you're ever in Norman, Oklahoma, we're right on Main Street. I mean, the police, we're right around from the police department. Everybody knows where we are, so please come visit. I have a sponsor today. I've had a sponsor since I've gotten sober. I think that's part of, a large part of why I'm still active in AA and sober and happy about being sober. My sponsor's Peg Martin. She is from the Foxhall Group in Bellevue, Nebraska, and she is she's my light, as I like to say. She's my light. When I can't see, you know, or feel the God of my understanding, which happens at times, you know, I can certainly feel her, let me tell you what, and I can hear her real loud. And I'm grateful to have that in my life. I was born in Oklahoma to two normal alcoholic parents. You know, they just loved to drink and they fought a lot, but I don't really remember them ever being married. They got divorced before my brother and I. I have a brother who's 13 months younger than I am, and I don't ever remember them being married. They divorced before I really recall that, so I don't have memories back that far. And they got divorced. He came to California. My mother lived in Oklahoma, and I love my mother. I thought my mother was the most beautiful woman in the world. She would come and pick us up at school, and when she did, I was proud that she was there. She was a nurse, and back then they wore the caps and the white shoes and the white stockings, and I just thought she was beautiful. And when it was cold, she'd wear this blue cape, and I just thought she looked like something out of a book. And but she always smelled like peppermint, and now I know why. She drank a lot. Good for her. You know, my mother was she was gone a lot. I remember her being gone a lot, and people trying to find her, and my brother and I'd be at babysitters for days and days because she would drink and go places, you know, and that's what she did. And we would stay at my grandmother's, and eventually we would stay at my grandmother's a lot. And one day the social workers came, and my brother and I were put in a foster home, and it was the first of many foster homes that we would be in, and that's alcoholism. And that's what I've learned from this program. My mother did absolutely the very best she could. And what is so magnificent about this program, because of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and because I've sat in rooms and listened to so many people in Alcoholics Anonymous tell their stories and talk to me and tell me their stories and how they got to the solutions they are in their life. Because of that, I don't just say that. It's not something in my head. It's in my heart. I know it with all my heart that she absolutely did the very best she could. My dad became aware that we were in this foster home, and he lived here in California, and he came and got us. And he had married a nice Mexican lady, and so he took us to California to live. About 350,000 people picked us up at the airport. They had this giant family, and they were hugging and binging and kissing and loving. And I thought, great, you know. And we got in this big car and went really fast on a freeway. And I have not seen a freeway. And I thought, and I love going fast. I still go fast. And I loved it. I thought it was the greatest thing. And jets, we were on a jet to get here. And I thought, you know, in the book, in Bill Story says, I've arrived. You know, I thought that at 6, 7, and 8 years old. You know, I got to California, I'd arrived. And I felt that. And I thought it would be different here. I thought it would be different because I felt like she loved us and the family loved us. And it was they drank and they cried and they danced and they ate lots of great food. And I liked it. I loved it. It was fiesta. You know, it was fun. And I thought that was, you know, alcohol. I equated it for so many years that it was such a bad thing. You know, because my mother would drink and I knew when she drank that she would go away. You know, and that's why when I first took a drink, it was really good. It was very, very good. And I thought, well, maybe I'm not going to be like them because I always said I was so bad, but it wasn't bad when I drank it. So their hats would be off to me, for God's sake, you know. My brother and I, we came to live here, and unfortunately my father was in the throes of his disease. And one morning we got up and we were going to Arizona to live with an aunt and uncle. And you know, my brother and I did not see our mother again, our real mother again, until I was 19 and he was about 19 or 20. We didn't see her again for a long, long time. And we didn't see this lady again. I didn't see her again until I was 18. And I'm thinking, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me that I can't seem to be a part of a family and I never felt a part of. And so we went to live with my aunt and uncle I'm about 10 years old at this time, and the most magnificent thing happened, and it would be something that would change my life forever. My father got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't think it was all that great a thing then. I didn't know what the ramifications would be, but he got sober in AA, and we were to come back to California and live, and yet we would go to another foster home. And I know that, you know, I used to think that was such a, like it was just a decision and you just go live here. And today, you know, I know that his sponsor was Clancy for his entire sobriety. And I know that they sat and they had to go over this and over this. And I have done this with people. I have sponsored women whose children were in foster homes. And so today I know what a hard thing that is to do and to walk through with a sponsoree. And it's just, I have such a different perspective of it today. But we were to come here and live in another foster home. My father lived in a 12-step house at that time. It was not, you know, they didn't have a tennis court or a pool or anything. It was like some cots, and it's this house, I believe, is on Beacon Street. And I remember that because I remember the day I went and saw him, and I remember that he looked a little better, but he still looked mean to me. You know, I didn't get along with my father. It wasn't his fault, really, because he just wasn't my mom. And he and I, it was like gasoline in a match, you know. And he'd say blue, and I'd say green, and that's how it was from the minute we met each other. And so my dad, we went to live in this foster home, and it was a black foster home. And we were supposed to only live there a couple of weeks till, I guess, a white foster home opened up, which was bizarre, but back then they didn't really do that, and they kind of forgot we were there or something, and when they discovered that they should move us, we liked it so much and we didn't want to leave. And we were supposed to be there just a couple of weeks. We ended up living there 3.5 years, and it was wonderful. She was a wonderful lady. Her and her husband, they had a son, and more kids came to the foster home. There was a Mexican girl named Hilda. She came to the foster home, and a Indian boy, Sioux Indian, Myron Fast Horse. I always thought his name was so cool. And Fast Horse, you know. And this all these kids started coming to the home, and she loved kids. And I remember we'd sit around the table, and it always reminded, and I always get this visual of us sitting around the kitchen table talking or eating, and it looked like a meeting of the Junior United Nations, you know? And we didn't even know we were a different color, you know? And I came home from school, and I go, "What's a honky?" And she said, "Well..." You know, and I go, "What is a cracker?" And then she goes, "Oh," she goes, "Honey, that's just ignorance." You know, and I thought that was neat, you know, that's what she thought. And it was funny because we really never saw each other's different colors. And one time her son, we were somewhere they were making fun of me because I was white. "What are you doing with that white girl?" And he said, "Are you white?" And I said, "Yeah, I guess." You know, and it was just a kind of a funny joke around the house, you know, and I know that, and we all loved each other, and it was like, in that home, we were just happy, and unfortunately, there was prejudice outside of the home, but when we lived there, things were good, and my dad would come to visit, and he came to visit, and none of the other kids, their parents, I don't remember any of their parents coming to visit, maybe a sister or two, but my dad, he came all the time. And I know that those are the actions he took in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I sponsor today, and one of the things I know is that I don't just sponsor someone. I sponsor someone's mom and someone's sister and someone's aunt, someone's grandmother. And so I think of those things, and I'm so touched tonight because there's so many people here that were there then. And I know those were the actions he took. I know that he felt guilty. I know that he didn't feel good about himself. But he didn't say, "I don't feel..." He didn't do that. He just took the action because his sponsor made him. And I am very grateful standing here tonight that this child was happy that they had, their dad had a strong sponsor. And I don't want to be a disservice to someone else and not be that kind of person in Alcoholics Anonymous to someone else. To take the right action, no matter how I feel. To do the right thing. To suggest that they do these things. It says suggestions, you know, I pretty much give direction as a sponsor, but... Oh, it's just in my genes. What can I say? I'm sorry. And that's my experience. My experience as a kid and my experience as an alcoholic in recovery. We lived in this foster home. My father met a nice lady in Alcoholics Anonymous. She had two kids. He had two kids. We got together. It was not the Brady Bunch. Let me tell you what. It was crazy. I was very needy, and I wanted a mom really bad. You know, I wanted a mom. And she had a son that was very ill with cystic fibrosis, and all her energy went into him. And I was so self-absorbed and self-centered. I thought, you know, take care of me, take care of me. And she just couldn't. She couldn't do it. She was taking care of a child who would eventually pass away. And we lived with her. That marriage didn't work out. And so we went down the street to live with her sister, our aunt, our step-aunt. So we went down the street to live with her. They got divorced. And, you know, I haven't had a drink yet. Well, I've had some sips and stuff. Boy, I sure can use one. And I got invited. I was 15 years old. I got invited to the prom, you know. And it was like the guy came up to me. He said, "I hear you don't have a date, and I don't either. You want to go?" And I thought, how romantic. Okay. That's the beginning of my dating life. Oh, boy. You know? So, my aunt is so kind. I mean, she has four children. She took my brother and I in, and she had her mother living there, too. And that's a lot of children. And five of us, five, were teenagers. I mean, that's insane. I know, she was nuts. And I didn't know she was a saint or crazy, you know? And so she said, "I'm going to take you to get your dress." And it was like she made an event out of it. And she had all these other kids to do this for, too. But she took me in, and I picked out this kind of low-cut, little straight, really kind of snug yellow dress. And I loved it. I thought it looked fabulous. And she goes, "Oh, Sheila, this is it." And she picks out this giant green dress. It had the biggest... Oh, it's hideous. Had the giant green flowers all over it. And it had like an accordion neck with a ruffle at the top, you know? And it cinched right under my ribs, and it just billowed out, you know. And it wasn't the dress of my dreams, you know. It wasn't the vision for me, and it was just awful. And so I'm kind of in trouble, though. I'm smoking cigarettes. I'm, you know, back then the guys had vans, you know. Oh, jeez. And And it was like, I went to Catholic school, you know, and I used to say, you know, my dad doesn't love me. My dad traded plumbing work so my brother and I could go to Catholic school, and I tell you, my dad didn't love me. You know, those are the things that went on. We went to Catholic school, so Catholic girls didn't go jumping in vans, except I did. And so, anyway, and my aunt was like, don't get in vans, and I'd get in vans, you know. And I remember this one guy, he had on his bumper sticker, evil, wicked, mean, and nasty. And I'm like, he's for me, that's my guy, you know, hey. And it, you know, and so I'm kind of in trouble around the house. I'm getting in trouble and stuff. And I know that I've pushed him. And so I think I better do something good so like we can live here. And that's my thinking. And so I said, okay, I'll get the green dress. So I got the green dress, you know, and she said, well, would you go to my hairdresser, you know, and I said, I go, oh, okay. And, you know, hindsight's 20/20, and her daughters have never, will never, and did never go to her hairdresser in their lives. And I said, yes. Why I would do that, I have no idea. So I said, yes. So I go in there, and the lady, you know, puts my hair in curlers. I'm under the dryer for a couple of weeks, it seemed like, and it was horrible. And I had real, real long, long hair down my back, and you only wore it like maybe curled at the ends on a special occasion. And she said, how do you want it? And I said, well, maybe like this part up a little bit, but down. And, you know, she kept making my hair go up and up and up, and my hair became this big. And it kind of went like a football. It just kept going, you know, and so my aunt comes in, and she's so excited. Oh, you know, oh, you look so beautiful. And she's got this baby's breath, and it's yellow and white, and she's sticking this baby's breath, you know, adding insult to injury. And you know, and I hate myself. I'm looking in the mirror. I hate myself. And so me and my hair, we go out to the car, and I get in the car. I get home. I put on the giant green dress, you know, and I look at myself in the mirror, and I think, I'm a bush in bloom, you know. And it's just not, you know, and how I imagined that whole thing is when he came in, I would come down the staircase, and I'd have like a little thing flowing, and I would look, you know, it was a one-story house. What was I doing, you know? I have this idea of stuff, and I kept thinking I'd come down some stairs. There were no stairs. So my date comes in, you know, he comes in, and I hate myself, and my dad comes from down the street. My foster mother came, you know, to watch me go to the prom. My dad, you know, and my dad, we would come home from cheerleading practice. I'd come home, and I'd wave at him. And they go, who's that? And I go, well, that's my dad. And they go, your dad? Your dad lives down the street from you? And I go, yeah, doesn't yours? You know, because the abnormal becomes normal for me, you know. It's like, yeah, and it worked out better. Trust me, we got along much better when he lived down the street, you know. Hi, how you doing? Rah, 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 bye-bye, Dad. Love you like a rainbow. It was great for our relationship. And so he came from down the street, and 3 days, I got to mention this, 3 days before the prom, my date, in front of everybody in the entire school, bit the head off a live frog. Yeah, they bet him. It was a bet. Well, I bet you won't do that. Yeah, I will. And he did, and he spit it out, and he got $100. And he said, well, I needed money for the prom. I said, I'd have loaned it to you. What are you doing? You crazy man. So in he comes, you know, I don't want my dad to know that the guy I'm going to the prom with just bit the head off a live frog. You know, it's kind of like, it's not good. You know, it's not good for our relationship. And, you know, because it was like, I wanted my dad to love me. And it was like, love me, love me, love me. But I did everything I could to push him away. I just pushed his buttons and did things. And you know, this would be just one more of my antics, you know. Hey, Dad, you know, he would not like that. And so anyway, so this guy comes in, and my little cousin Kelly, God love him, he comes in and he looks up like he's seen, you know, a football hero. And he goes, are you the guy? And I'm like, no, no. And are you the guy that bit the head off a live frog? And my dad goes, for God's sake, rah, rah, rah. And he starts growling, you know, and his eyes kind of get glazed over and big. And I said, we need to get out of here. So we whisk off to the prom, and he's got this car. Now, you know, everybody borrowed a car, like something really nice from a parent or a grandparent. No, not him. He had a Dodge Dart. He told me it was a classic. Yeah. You know, the kind that you push the button, it started, and thought it was the most wonderful. Look at this. He goes, it's a classic. And it's like, it is now. It wasn't then. It was just old, you know. And so, you know, we go off to the prom, and he's got these little glasses of champagne in the car. And they weren't even real glasses. It was plastic. And and he pours a little champagne in there, and I'm so busy trying to get that little thing to stick on the bottom. It just made me crazy. I wanted to look really cool, you know. And I'm messing with this, and this thing's tipping over, you know, and I had a few sips, nothing, no big deal. And we get to the prom, and it was fine. Nothing happens. And then we go to the after parties. I love the after parties. It was wonderful. People kept coming up, mixing me drinks in this little tiny glass. And I kept thinking, you know, this isn't going to hurt me because I know about alcoholism. I mean, I've been around y'all for years. You know, I knew what a blackout was before I had one. I know a little bit too much. I've seen too much. And so I've got this thing in my mind. I really got to be careful. And I don't want to get in trouble. But, you know, I thought, you know what? This isn't going to hurt me. And they made me tequila sunrises and salty dogs and margaritas. And I had 150 of those puppies. And let me tell you what happened. My hair got long and straight. My flowers flew off my dress. And frog lips started looking really good. And that's how, and I love what Clancy says, that the disease of perception. Everything seemed to change. Nothing had really changed. Everything was really the same. But to me, it went away. And Johnny Harris talks about it too, the big hurt. And I had this big hurt, and it seemed like I had it all my life. And that night, I didn't care. I didn't care that I'd been in foster homes. I didn't care that I hadn't seen my mother in years. I didn't care that I didn't live with my dad. I didn't care anymore. I just didn't care. I didn't care that my hair wasn't the way. I didn't care. I felt like everything was okay. I felt like everything was just fine, just going to be all right. And I love the way alcohol made me feel. It talks about it in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the doctor's opinion, that alcoholics drink essentially for the effect produced by alcohol. That's me. You know, I love the way it made me feel. I like the way it made me feel screwed up. I loved it. That's fine with me. You know, and it's like it wasn't even a euphoria. I didn't have to feel what I was feeling. My feelings weren't so hurt all the time. When I was drinking, my feelings weren't that hurt. That was so nice. I used to walk around so afraid. I remember being so afraid my whole life. I was afraid of everything. I was afraid of school. I was afraid of lots of people. I was afraid of everything. And when I drank, I wasn't afraid anymore. You know, and I didn't really care what anyone thought. And it was a freedom. It was a freedom. And you know, I hate to sound like that, but that's how it was for me. After the prom, I threw up, I blacked out, and I passed out. That night, that's my, you know, first drunk, you know, and that's how I drink. I drink until it's gone. I mean, when I start, it was so interesting because sometimes I would just drink and have a good time and nothing would happen and it'd be okay. And I didn't get in trouble every time I drank, but every time I was in trouble, drinking was involved, you know, every time. And there were so many times that I would think, you know, I eventually had a child, and I would start at happy hour, and I think I'm just going to have a few drinks and pick him up, you know. And I meant to go get him, you know, and I started drinking, and, you know, then I'm making up a story at midnight that I had a flat tire for hours on end. And then the other one must have blown up too, you know. And those stories I make up because I'm not there. I'm not picking my son up. I was supposed to pick him up from the daycare, from the babysitter, and that is powerless, absolutely powerless. Once I start to drink, I intended to have a few drinks and go pick him up, but I never made it, you know. And that's how I drink. I got out of high school. I had my first relationship was a major person in my life, as my stepmother loves to say, was a guy in my junior year. And I mean, I just booze and boys, have mercy. Ooh, I mean, it's wonderful. And you know, they're like soup and salad, you know, booze and boys. Oh, they just go together. Oh, my Lord, have mercy. And this guy, I mean, he like fixed me. I thought he was the most wonderful thing in the whole world. He just cared about me. And I just felt like just a queen around him. And I remember he played football, and he went on to play football at USC. And it was the Rose Bowl. And he played in the Rose Bowl, but he's told me he had sold his ticket. And back then you got to let me out $300 or $400 for it, which was a lot of money, you know. And he told me, he said, you know, I'll come afterward. I'll come get you afterward, after the Rose Bowl. And I watched the Rose Bowl, and I got all dressed up, and I waited. And I waited, and I waited, and I waited. And he never came and got me. And I remember thinking, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? And I found out later he never sold his ticket. He gave it to his next girlfriend. You know, and that's just stuff that happens. But for me, it was just so traumatic. But I remember I got in my car and went to a bar, and I was fine. I'd have a few drinks and thought, screw him. I'll go find a ram. You know? I'll go find a real man. You know? But I didn't feel that way until I had a few drinks. You know? I got out of high school and I started waitressing and I started... I went to manicuring school. I went to cosmetology school, became a manicurist. I did that. When I was 19 years old, I woke up in a field one night. I remember going to work. I got off work, had a few drinks, and woke up in a field. I came to in a field. I wasn't quite sure how I got there. To this day, I still don't know how I got there. The next night, I went to my father's home group, the Pacific group, and I went to his AA birthday. It was his 10-year birthday. I went in there, and a lady spoke, and I identified. And I went over and I talked to a lady named Sharon Barker, and she went over to her house the next day and we started talking, and she said, you know, and she asked me questions and she said, why don't you start going to meetings? And I started going to meetings and I stayed sober 9 months, you know, but I didn't do the deal. What I did was I was into a lot of activity, but I wasn't taking right action. I wasn't reading the book. I wasn't working the steps, taking the steps. I wasn't applying them to my life. I was running around doing a lot of activity. I wasn't taking right action. And the pain of being sober got so bad that I had to take a drink. And that's what happened. And, you know, and what happened, though, I slowly started here. I heard so many wonderful people and stories, and I should have identified. But what I did was I started not identifying. I started saying, well, I never did that. I was only 19. I never really did that. And I talked myself out of it. You know, and today, you know, I know the thing that I have to do is always look for the similarities and not the differences. Because the disease of alcoholism, my disease will start telling me things that, well, you never really did that. Well, maybe you're just really young. Maybe you had a financial problem. Oh, I always thought I had that for sure. If I'd had money, I wouldn't have been that bad. You know, that was my answer always. If I just had an extra job and more money, you know. And those things, it would never have been enough because I would have drank it away. After I left, I got out of... drank after 9 months of sobriety and went crazy, and I met another him, and I thought, well, I'll settle down. That's what I need to do. People say, why don't you settle down? I ought to settle down. Why don't I settle down? I met this guy who owned a bar. Oh, well, free beer and pool the rest of my life. I do, and I did, and we got married. We got married. We were married for all of 6 months. I was still writing thank you letters out when we got divorced. And oh, missed commitment, and... it was like, bye-bye. And, you know, I just could not be committed. I couldn't be committed. My mother got very ill at this time right before he and I broke up. I had seen my mother one time, and I got a call that she was dying, and she was in a hospital in Texas. And so I flew to Dallas, Texas, and took a cab to Baylor Hospital, and it's an indigent hospital. And she was there, and she was... I started to walk in, and this sweet nurse comes up to me and goes, I want to tell you, you know, I want to warn you, you know, there's a lot of tubes, and she's real yellow, and she's swollen. And she was trying to be kind. And where I'd gotten to, and my cynicism, and my attitude, and my toughness, I said, you know what? I said, I've been through so much in my life, this is going to be no big deal. And that's where I'd gotten to. And I walked in there, and of course it was horrible. I mean, she was the color of mustard and very swollen, and she wasn't that beautiful lady that I knew as a little girl. And I sat there with her and read to her, and they said the last thing to go was the hearing when they're in a coma, and she didn't even know I was there. The next day her sisters came, and people came to visit, and... they start telling me little stories about when I was a little girl and this and that, and my brother and I, and what we did when we were little. And I thought, and what I'm thinking, but I don't say this. And I think, well, where did y'all go? How come you didn't come get us? And that's the stuff I've got. I come in here. I came in AA with lots of stuff like that. And I said, well, where'd you go? You know, and I don't say anything. And the nurse comes out and says, you know, you need to come in right now. So we go in there, and my mother was sitting up. And she said to me, will you forgive me? And that's the first thing she said. And I said, yes. I really learned about forgiveness here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You all have given me the tools and the steps and the experience for forgiveness. And I don't believe that I have the power to forgive. I really don't believe I have it. But I could take actions toward forgiveness. And that's what I learned to do in AA. I had to take actions toward my father to forgive him and to stop being so mad at him. I took my sponsor when I first got sober would make me do two things a day for him that were nice. And I balked at first. I thought, what do you mean? He ought to be doing something nice for me. Hello, you know. And that was how I was. I'm not proud of it, but that's how I was. And my father drank hot tea in the morning, so when I was newly sober, I had to get up at 6:45 in the morning. I did not have to be up at 6:45. My sponsor had that was my call time. I was willing, and I got up. My dad was a morning person, and I've always been kind of a morning person, sober, and sober. And so I would put on his hot tea for him, and I'd go get his newspaper. And we could talk about sports, news, weather, sports, but mostly sports because we agreed on sports. I love the Lakers, and I love the Dodgers. And my brother and my father were big. All they did was watch sports, and they wouldn't play Barbie, so I watched sports. And it's good, too, because I have two boys now, and they love that I love sports. And my dad gave me my love of sports. And so we could talk about the Dodgers because we like the Dodgers. We could talk about, you know, the Lakers. We could talk about sports because we agreed and we had a common thing and we'd have a little time in the morning to sit and visit. And one morning I kept taking these actions, and one morning I got up and he was reading his big book. He was sitting in his chair. And for some reason that touched me. And he was just sitting over there. He just looks so I can see him right now. And I just thought he just looked so sweet for once. And for once he looked so sweet. And it just touched my heart. And I think that's when things started to change for me toward him. But I think that if I take actions toward forgiveness, that God has the power to change my heart. And I wanted my heart changed when I got here. I didn't want the same heart that I had. So my mother, I had 3 days with my mother, and I was the best daughter I could be at that time to her. And I remember going home to her apartment and searching for booze, trying to find booze because I wanted a drink. And I'm looking in her apartment for booze, and she's dying of alcoholism. My mother was dying of cirrhosis, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I left about 4 or 5 days after I got there. The doctor said she could be this way 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 days, you know, 6 hours. And so I left, and I was going to come back in about a week or two. And my mother died that Friday. It was on Good Friday, and she died alone in a hospital by herself. And I always felt so bad about that. And you know, that's alcoholism. That's where it happens. I called my father, who was so kind. He was so kind, and I told him I said Mama died, and he came with my brother and I back to Oklahoma, and helped me bury my mother. And I'm sure that wasn't comfortable for him. I'm sure that he felt uncomfortable. They hadn't been married in many, many years, but he did that because that's the kind of man he was, an Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you all taught him those things, because he was willing to do those kind of things. And I will always be so grateful that he walked us through that. That was a hard time. And my brother and my dad and I were all standing around her grave, and it's the first time I ever remember us all being together. And I think she would have liked that. I came back to California, and I divorced at him because it's probably all his fault anyway. You know how that goes. Gotta blame somebody. And I did. And I kind of went on reckless abandon after that. I started waitressing a lot, drinking a lot. I started getting into drugs. Drugs are just a part of my story. I like drugs that make me go fast and that make me stay awake a long, long time so that I can drink lots and lots of booze. I love to drink. You know, I was at a biker bar, I don't know if it's still in L.A., called Mother's. And that's not like the place that you want to go, but I loved it. And I was in there with one of my roommates and this giant biker guy. And what a nice guy. He looked over and goes, you know, you drink a lot for a little girl. And you know, you ought to look at your drinking when that's going on. You know, then maybe you should take a look at that. And I just laughed at him and said, oh, be quiet. Shh, you know, And it was funny because I look back on people started to say things. Did you eat? And I remember a bunch of us girls were going to go out after work. Sheila, did you eat enough? I go, why? Well, the last time you said it was because you hadn't eaten. Oh, or because I ate too much. Or I had cake. You know, I would have excuses all the time for my bizarre behavior. We went out one night. And it was in, we went out and we went to go listen to this really nice, it was a nice place too, pretty nice place. And it was a really great band and everybody wanted to go hear it. And so we did. And I remember having 2 glasses of wine. And then I come to and I'm on the hood of a car. I was hanging out on the hood of a car. And then I kind of appear again. I like disappear and appear. That's what it feels like to me in a blackout. And then I appear and I'm like at this apartment complex up against it, you know? And there's like this, here I am, here's an apartment complex, here I am, and then these bushes, these hedges are right here, and then there's a chain link fence. I think, what am I doing here, you know? And so I can't get out because there's a chain link fence and there's bushes and there's an apartment complex, you know? And so, you know how the chain link fence will stop and start and there's those poles? So I get in there and I'm squeezing myself. I'm about to kill myself, really. And I'm cutting myself up and I'm trying to get through there. And then I look and there's these people walking their dog and they're going. So, you know, I go, what are you looking at? And they're like, nothing. And they run away, you know. And so I finally get through and I've scraped my legs up and I've torn my clothes and I get through and I'm like, God. Thank God I'm out of there. And I look over and 3 feet ahead of me is a gate. Now that's me, you know. And then, so then I appear back at the bar and, you know, and then they're looking at you. You know, you're torn up. I got leaves. They're going, Sheila, you have leaves in your hair. You know, they go, where have you been? I go, I just went out for the lair. You know, they said, that was 2 hours ago. I said, you've got to be kidding. And she said, no, they're done. The band's over. I said, were they good? You know, because, and I can't believe that I thought I only had a couple. Well, no, I didn't. All I remember is a couple. I had a lot more than a couple, but I only remembered a couple. You know, and they're pulling leaves out of your hair and they're trying to get you back and they're, you know, I'm cut up and, you know, and I said, well, I got caught up in this apartment complex and then they, you know, that look they give you like, you know, I got those a lot, you know. I remember my girlfriend, I was telling her about how afraid I was. I said, don't you ever just get so afraid? And she goes, no. I said, well, when I watch a scary movie, I get kind of scared. I'm like, don't you ever just like, sometimes you just drive down the street and you're like, you think that like something's after you? She goes, no. You know, and then I came here and you all went, yes. I like to say, I always thought I heard this when I was newly sober and I loved it. I always felt like a zebra running with Mustangs, you know, until I got to AA and found out where all the zebras hung out, you know. I just love that, you know, because it's like I can be one of many here with you. I got sober eventually. What happened for me was I met another hymn. You know, I met this hymn and I moved down to Camp Pendleton, California. It was a Marine. I met this Marine, and, you know, I thought, Lord have mercy, they take care of the entire United States. Surely he can handle me. You know, I'll get a, you know, because, I mean, I love a man in uniform. I'm sorry, girl. Oh, Lord have mercy. And, you know, it's so good. And they're all, you know, all straight and doing the right thing, and gee whiz, you know. And I thought, I'll get a good guy, you know, one of the few and the proud, you know. You know, that poor Marine, he's never been the same since. And my amends to him was, leave that poor man alone. Don't ever go near him again, you know. And I haven't. I didn't bother him. And you know, it was like I kept thinking if I could just be with someone else or be somewhere else doing something else, and I've heard that so many times in these rooms, then I would be better. And it never worked. I always took me with me. I just always took me with me. And that didn't work out. Before that, I had a child out of wedlock, and I love that baby. I was going to be the best mom in the whole world, and I had this little boy, and in my eighth month, his daddy left, and my son does not know his father, I got to look at my part in that inventory because I always felt like such a victim in that. And my part in that inventory, what I found was that, you know, he did not want to be a father. He did not want to be a husband. He did not want to do that. And by being with me, that's what I wanted. And that's what came about. And I had to look at my part that, you know, that's not what he wanted in life. And I made too many big decisions without thinking about him. And so I got to look at my part in an inventory and saw that I was trying to make something out of nothing. And it was really good, and it was real honest, and so I wasn't such a victim anymore in that situation. And so I met this Marine and moved with this baby down there. And, you know, and the whole time I'm calling my dad, you know, and I stopped calling. You know, and there were times my father, literally months and months, that he didn't know where I was. And the phone number he had last was disconnected. And I was a terrible daughter. And I wasn't good to him. I didn't, you know, I stole his right to be happy. And I stole a lot of things from, I stole joy from him. And I used to say, I can't imagine what it would feel like not to know where your children are. And I stand here tonight knowing what it's like not to know where one of your children is. You know, my oldest son is having a really tough time. He's, you know, he's been a good kid for years. I mean, he's just done well, and he's this incredible baseball player, and he plays baseball and he could have had a scholarship to go to college, and that's how good he was. And 6 weeks before his senior graduation, he decides to go hang out with some guys that are smoking a little something, and you know, the police come, and he wasn't smoking anything that time because he had a game that evening. But they found some paraphernalia in his car, and he went to jail. And I had to leave him there for the weekend, and it was his birthday. And you know, his coach called me on Saturday and said, you know, I'm sorry, Sheila. He said, this isn't what we do on our team, and I will lose my credibility as a coach if I allow him back. And it broke my heart. I mean, it was one of the hardest weekends, but I went to a meeting. You know, I went to a meeting. I didn't miss my meetings that weekend. You know, I was with you. You all know what the solution is. I just showed up, shook a lot of hands, you know, because that's what I have to do. I have to walk through these things. And so today I do know what that is. He moved out and he lives with whoever, and he's living in different places. And you know, he stopped by last night, and I was kind to him and, you know, had dinner. We had dinner, and, you know, I just try not to ask too many questions, and he didn't give too many answers, and I just have to love him right now. And, you know, I want to say to him, are you alcoholic? Or are you just a teenager? Would you give me a clue here, you know? Because they're both kind of the same, you know. And but who am I to say, you know? But I know one thing. My sponsor, Peggy, she's helped me so much with this. She got kind of tired of hearing from me. Hello, Sheila? I mean, she was answering the phone. Hello, Sheila? Because I was calling her. Oh, yes. Oh, that's hysterical. It was really a lot of pain. And she said, you know, Sheila, he's been raised in the solution, and he will come back to the solution. You did. You know, and that just really touched me, and it really made it okay. And I repeat that over and over in my head when I get really afraid for him, when the fear is so great that I want to go look for him, you know, and I just have to do that. I eventually, that Marine left me for a wave or a whack, you know, seriously. And, you know, you got to get, you know, it's like, date me and marry someone else. That was my life story. Date me and you'll marry someone else, you know. Or you'll decide you're gay, you know. That's usually, yeah, let me tell you. So anyway, so what happened was I ended up living on the floor at this girl's house because I didn't have anywhere to live. And she let me live on the floor. And I was waitressing and I was drinking and using lots of drugs and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And I came in one night and I was supposed to be in, you know, at a reasonable hour after my shift, and I would party all night, and then I would come in about 6 o'clock, and the house started waking up around 7, so I would lay down and pretend that I'd been there, you know, a reasonable amount of time, and I hadn't. And one night she, you know, then I'd get up and pretend I was waking up for the morning. And she caught me coming in one night, and she said, you know, if it weren't for that baby, you wouldn't live here. If it weren't for your son, I wouldn't let you live here. She said, can you call somebody? I know your mother's dead, but can you call somebody because you really need some help? She said, right now, she said, you have these sores on your legs. I don't even know if you notice them. And one of your eyes is incredibly dilated and the other one isn't. And she said, I think you're about to have a stroke. And I just said, no, I'm just, you know, I said, I'm just really tired. You know, she said, yeah, you are, and you need to call somebody. And for some reason, I did, and I called my dad. And I didn't always call my dad. I mean, I thought, you know, I didn't want him to know where I was. I just felt so uncomfortable. What am I? And I just don't want to talk to you. You know, because I know you're in the solution, and I don't want to talk to you, and I just was humiliated with my life. And he didn't answer, but his wife did, and he married a black belt Al-Anon, and she's a neat lady, and she, yeah, all the Al-Anons are lovely. And she said, I said, is he there? And she said, no, he's in the back room doing a fifth step. As soon as he's done, I'll have him call you back. Well, I left. It was like I admitted something, and I left. And, you know, I left there. And came back. And the next day, through circumstances, my dad and I talked. He sent me a one-way, non-cashable, non-refundable, non-anythingable ticket. You know, my dad invented tough love. And he sent that to me, and my son and I, we came to Oklahoma on a one-way ticket. And you know, I didn't get sober right away. I had to, you know, I lived there for a while. My father and I got in a horrible fight. And, of course, I had to start it because that's how I leave. And then I make it look like it's his fault. And, you know, and I do those things. And I did that. Our relationship was very volatile, and I had a big part in it. And I get to look at my part today. And And we didn't have a good relationship for a long time. And so I left and I went and met some friends and birds of a feather flock together, because I thought, I'll go to Oklahoma. Nothing happens in Oklahoma. You know, I'll meet some old boy and we'll raise chickens together or something, you know. But that wasn't it, because I met the same kind of people, you know. And I found nothing changed because I didn't change me. I just took me with me and met these girls. And we had a party one night. It was December the 14th, 1984. And I started drinking. And I had put my son to bed. He was 20 months old. And I put him to bed. And I came to the next morning. He wasn't in bed, and we shared the same room. I didn't know where he was. It was December 15th. It was very, very, very cold outside, and I went to find him. I couldn't find him, and I looked in my roommate's room. He wasn't in there, and I thought, my God, he's got outside and froze to death, because that's what happens a lot of times in Oklahoma. It gets very, very cold, and the kids can go outside accidentally and not get back in and freeze to death. And I thought, my God, I've killed him. And I'm running around, and I'm screaming, and I'm running outside, and I'm just hysterical. And my roommate comes out of the room. She goes, where were you last night? What were you doing? I mean, that disgusted look. They're disgusted with you at this point. And I said, I can't find Bradford. And she said, he's right there. And he was down in the hallway, and he had these, and I never want to forget this, he had these yellow jammies with the feet in them, and he came waddling up to me, and he put his arms up, and he said, Mom. And I just thought, and I remember saying, Mommy's going to get help. And they kept asking me, where were you? What were you doing last night? And I couldn't remember. And he had been snuggled under her comforter, so when I peeked in the room, I couldn't see him. And I called somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they had given me a phone number. I'd gone to some Al-Anon meetings, you know, because I knew they could drink. So I went to Al-Anon, because when I lived with my parents, I had to go to something. I wasn't ready to confess my sins yet, you know. And I thought, well, Al-Anons don't drink. Huh. And then, you know, this lady was crying after a meeting, and I said, oh, don't worry, you know, have a drink and a Quaalude. He'll be home. And they were, you know, so I wasn't flying big in Al-Anon, you know. And they were like, wow. And so luckily the women alcoholics, thank God for the women alcoholics who recognized me. You know, they just knew. And they would come up and talk to me all the time, and I'd be, huh, yeah, you know, that's nice. And this one gal named Mary gave me her card and said, please call me, you know. And I called her that morning, and she wasn't home, but her husband was. And he said, you know, I know way too much about you. He said, I know your dad really well. And he said, you know, Sheila, he said, are you sober right now? And I said, no. He said, are you drunk right now? I said, well, I'm hungover. And he said, well, come over. And I did. And what happened from then is that I went over to his house, and he 12-stepped me. He had a big book and a cup of coffee and a kitchen table. And he said, Sheila, you don't ever have to drink again if you don't want to. And you don't ever have to feel this way again if you don't want to. And he said, and everything will be all right. And from that day to this, he's been true to his word. You know, I've never felt that way. I've never been drunk since. And everything's been all right. It has not been perfect. Sobriety has not been a bubble. I didn't get sober and it all, you know, and then I became a brain surgeon. That is not my story. And I think if you have that story, good. I really, because I might need one someday. But, but you know, I love what Norm Alpie used to say. You know, if you come in as a ditch digger, you'll be a better ditch digger. You know, I came in as a manicurist. So I'm just a better manicurist. I mean, I actually paint the fingernail and not the knuckles anymore. You know, I had a lot of amends to make too. Oh my gosh. And you know, and I show up, I'm there. I used to just go out for lunch and never come back. I didn't care if it was your wedding the next day, you know. I mean, I was a terrible, terrible, terrible employee. And today I'm a better ditch digger, you know. And I went to a meeting that night, and I said, you know, it's so funny. I love what Bob Darrell says. I just love it. That, you know, alcoholics lose everything. I mean, I was in dire straits. I mean, I'm just crazy. And he says to me, I want you to go to a meeting tonight. And I said, well, yeah, but I'm not going to go to Dad's group, the group that you and Dad go to. I'm going to find my own AA, you know, my own way. And, you know, here I am. I'm just about to die 30 minutes ago. And I love, and Bob says this, you know, alcoholics lose everything. The first thing they get back is their opinion, you know. It's just, I love that, because I'm ready to just crawl on nails. And then he says, why don't you come to our meeting? Oh, no, sorry. That group's a little too structured for me, thanks. I'm going to find my own deal. But thanks for sharing. So about 7:15, I talked myself out of going to a meeting. Because, you know, maybe I've overreacted again. You know, like the field. Maybe I just have a location problem. And, you know, and that's the disease of alcoholism. That is so sick. My mind is telling me you're probably not really an alcoholic. I mean, it's... And then thank God, my roommates say, I thought you were going to an AA meeting. And I said, well, you know, I don't have a babysitter. In unison, we'll watch him. When you're drinking buddies, will watch your baby so you can go to an AA meeting. You might want to take a look at your drinking. You know? And so I went, and it was Christmas time, and my dad was in that meeting, and he sat in his same seat, and I sat way in the back, you know, and I was scared to death. And they said, are there any newcomers in their first 30 days of sobriety? If so, please raise your hand. And I wasn't going to do that. I thought that was just too cutesy. I'm not doing that. That's dumb. Except they're watching you. You know, you feel... And I'm not imagining it this time. And I look over and people are going... And the guy that 12-stepped me earlier that day, he went like this and he scared me. And I went... Because I got to be cool. I got to be cool, you know. And that is exactly what I did. And then they say, we have desire chips at our group, you know, and you got to walk all the way up a mile to the front to get a desire chip. I hate that. Except after you don't have a desire chip anymore. You don't have to get that. I think it's wonderful for everyone. And I thought the 30-day thing was horrible till I had 31 days. Yay, oh, good for you. You know? It's funny how we are. And I thought it was to humiliate me until I had 31 days. And I didn't want to do that either. And he looked at me and goes, and so I did. And I got up there and I said, I'm a genuine alcoholic, thank you. And I sat down. But my father had seen me and they had a participation halfway through that meeting. And he saw me raise my hand in the beginning of the meeting. And he said, of all the Christmas presents in the world, this one's the best. He said, I hope she stays here. I hope that I saw my daughter raise her hand and I hope she gets help here. And I hope you stay here and get the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was really beautiful. And I thought, you know, that OSOB my care. And it was the beginning. There's a song that my uncle used to sing. He was an evangelist singer, and you know, of course, I wasn't into that. But I heard him sing it at a really beautiful place called Canyon Conference. And it was New Lives for Old, Warm Hearts for Cold. And when I heard him sing that song, that's what I wanted. I wanted a new life, and I wanted a warm heart. And I had to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in order to get that. I had to take the steps and apply them to my life. What's happened up to now, what it's like today? I want to tell you that the most remarkable things have happened. Just absolutely. I met a real life him. He's normal. Well, he was normal. I fixed that. Love you, honey. But you cannot be normal and live with me for very long. I said, you just like excitement. I told him that the other day. He goes, oh, yeah, well, I've gotten that, you know. We will be married 12 years on Sunday. And that's a miracle for me. I wasn't with anybody 12 days, really, without having a fight. And I met this him, and we got married, and we had an AA wedding, you know, and a lot of people joke about that, but it was real special to me. My father walked me down the aisle, and, you know, he told me he loved me, and my brother was there, and Tracy was there, and, you know, it was just a neat, neat thing. And my youngest, my baby son, who was my oldest now, and he was the ring bearer. And, you know, my husband eventually adopted him, and he has loved him as if he was just his, and he is. He said he's always been mine, you know, and he loves him. He still loves him. And one of the things that I think that the blessings are is that when you get your family, when your family gets sober. You know, Tracy was sober longer than me, and unfortunately she had, you know, she went out again when she was 10 years sober. And she's here with me this weekend, and she's got 3 years, and she goes to a group in San Diego. And, you know, and I'm grateful for every day of her sobriety. You know, she loves me, and I love her. And we're here together this weekend, and George is with us, and we got somebody, I don't know, I have 10 or 12 people in my room by now. By the time Tracy's done with this, I should have lots of people. And but we've been having fun, and, you know, it's just, it's so neat to watch sobriety applied to someone's life, and then they start to get better. And but I also know that, you know, when I got a call from her that she was in an emergency room with two black eyes, in Texas, when I was sitting at work, those are calls that you don't want to get. And, you know, and I knew that, you know, she came to Oklahoma and she got sober there, and the girls I sponsor, who I adore, and I think I sponsor some of the most beautiful women in the whole wide world, they surrounded her, and the girls they sponsor surrounded her. And she slept on the couches, and then she eventually became roommates, and she got sober, and she did well and has done well. And tonight, my brother is here, and he has 4 months sober. And I have this moment, and you gave me this moment. Thank you for having me here so I could have that moment. We have not been in a meeting together. I waited 17 years for you to get here, and by God, you better stay. That's all I got to say. You know, and I know he's walking through the stuff, and he's about to start his fourth sip. He ought to be real fun to be around this weekend. Oh, my God. And I love you, and I hope that you find what I have found here because it's yours. All you got to do is come and apply the steps to your life, and you can have the healing that I've had here. And I hope you get that. I'll tell one story and then I'm gone. My father died 6 years ago. In fact, 6 years ago this weekend, we had his memorial, Clancy. And he got cancer and he had moved here. He had moved here to the desert, and I haven't been here since. And he had loved it here. He loved the desert. And he loved all his friends here. He did. He loved Jack and Carol. And they play golf. And, you know, and Bob. And y'all were telling me stories today. And I just tear up, you know, because it makes me happy. I'm not really sad. I just tear up because I used to never cry. And now I can't stop. I just hate. Oh, I love it. I used to never cry. And I got sober. And it's like I'm like a pond or something. Lord. You know. And he had moved here, and he got cancer, and he died very, very sudden, very soon, in three months. And, you know, we were at the International. We went to the International in San Diego, and I had come in early because Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to come in early. You know, come early and don't and stay late. You know, give somebody a ride when you get your license back, Sheila. Okay. You know, don't fool with the boys. I didn't fool with the boys this time. Much. No. You know, take the right action, do the things. Get to the meeting, see if you can do something for somebody else instead of walking in. And my sponsor said this a couple of weeks ago. Instead of going in going, here I am, how about walking in going, there you are. There you are. You know, instead of expecting something when I come to a meeting, go see what I can do for somebody at a meeting. My father used to say that if you look in the corners of the rooms, that's where you'll find a lot of alcoholics that are really scared and that are new and need to be worked with. You know, check the corners of the room. And I checked the corners of the room. And that's something he taught me. We came here for the International. And it was my dad's AA birthday. And I came early. You know, I wanted to see Clancy give him his cake. And because I just think that's so special. And so we got to go and went to the Wednesday night, went to the civic group. And it was fun. And girls I sponsor were driving in, fighting on the way, calling me. Oh, I go, shut up and get in the car. You know. And we just all kind of came to here, and we went to the Pacific group, and then we went on to the conference. And on the way home that night from my dad's birthday, you know, we were talking, and he said, you know, I always felt bad that I never got your braces. And I said, really? And he said, yeah, I just feel really bad. And I go, well, Dad, I'm going to get them sometime. I am. I said, I really have thought about it. He goes, you know, you always had that sweet little face and those crooked old teeth. And, oh, well, thanks. Love you. I said, well, okay. He said, I want you to, he goes, I said, well, I'm going to get him. He goes, well, let me know and I'll help you. And I said, okay. And unbeknownst to us, my father was sick and I didn't know. My father would not have another AA birthday. That was his last. And, you know, and God, I think he gave me a little Valentine. I got to be at his very last AA birthday, unbeknownst to us that it was his last. He did not make his 30th birthday. So I got 2 years later, I got these braces on, and I walk out in the parking lot from the dentist, and I looked up to heaven, and I go, I got my braces on. And I always think about that now. If somebody saw me doing that, don't they think I was pretty weird, you know? But I do not care today, so I do not care. And so I get in the car, and I start thinking, I wonder if my dad can really see my braces. I wonder if he's in heaven. Really. I wonder if there is heaven. And it gets darker, you know, those thoughts. And it's like, I wonder if you're just in the ground. And, oh, I mean, I get really, you know, I'm giving you a glimpse of 24/7, okay? That's a glimpse of me. So I was getting kind of, I was just dragging, you know. Oh, it was getting worse and worse and worse. So I thought, I'll call somebody that I sponsor. They're good for 15 minutes, you know. And she was, Brandy was true to her word. Hi, honey, how are you? Blah, 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 blah. I'm loving it, Driving down the road, I'm feeling better, back to normal. Whatever that is. 2 days later, we go to this thing, and it's called First Step. And these girls are about ready to go to prison, but we bring meetings there once a month. And we went in, but we got lost. We got lost on the way there, and we had never been there. And we just started doing this, and they had a men's First Step place and a women's. And it's out in the woods. I mean, out in the woods. We're driving. They go, this is where they found that dead girl. And I go, shut up, you know. God, you guys will kill me here. And they're like, really, this is where they throw dead bodies. And I go, well, great. Let's think of happy thoughts, girls. You know, and it's getting darker and darker, and we're late, and I am obsessed with, I got to be on time. I'm really nuts about it now that I'm sober, and we're late. And we kept going in and up the men's facility. We could not find the women's facility. And we were scared to get out because it was a men's facility, you know. We were scared. So finally they said, Sheila, we'll just have to call them. This girl was CPC coordinator, and one of them said, you know, we'll just call them tomorrow, and we'll see, you know, we'll tell them. We're sorry we had wrong directions. I go, no, I don't want to do that. I said, let's go back to the men's facility. We'll get out. We'll go talk to them, get directions to the women's facility, and call over there and let them know we're late, we're sorry, but we're coming. Well, we did that, and we got there, and we had like 20 minutes left of the meeting. And I said, can we have a whole meeting? And she said, no, you get 20 minutes. That was your hour. And I said, okay. So instead of doing the step two, we were going to read from the 12 and 12, we decided to do a panel. So we did 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes. And a lot of these girls shared and share your experience, strength, and hope in 5 minutes. And these girls were in a semicircle, and there must have been 50 of them in the room. And when it got to me, what I started sharing was, you know, that if you trust God and clean house, you can have what you want in life. And I said, you know, my dad always wanted me to have braces, and I got braces on this week. And I said, and I hope... I still don't know. And I said, and I hope he danced in heaven. And I look across the room, and there's this girl, and she has this T-shirt on. And I said, where did you get that T-shirt? And I don't really visit with people in a meeting. And the girls I sponsor are looking at me like, she's losing it. She's having a stroke. You know, she's TIAing on us, you know. I said, where did you get that T-shirt? She goes, out of the donation closet. And I said, stand up. And now they're about to commit me. They don't know what's wrong with me. I said, stand up. And I said, honey, that is my father's plumbing shirt you have on. And she said, I got it out of the donation closet. And I said, not only has it not been in business for 2 years, when it was in business, it was in Los Angeles, California, not Norman, Oklahoma. And one of the girls came up after the meeting, and she said to me with tears in her eyes, she said, Sheila, I think God's letting you know that your dad saw your braces. I know, huh? But if I hadn't gone the extra mile like you have taught me in Alcoholics Anonymous, if I had just quit because it was too hard, you have taught me that to continue to do these things, go the extra mile, help the newcomer, do a little more, wear a dress and a skirt at the podium, you know, look like a lady when you get up here. Do the right thing, try to help others, and things like this happen. Had I not done this, had I not gone the extra mile, I would have missed it. I would have absolutely missed it. And I know that everything that's good or anything that's exciting or any kind of God thing that's ever gone on was not me trying to get it. I have always been, any kind of healing I've had is sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Every time I'm with you, something seems to happen for me. When I'm giving myself to you, something seems to happen. I don't even know how it does. What if I said, okay, go home, I would have missed the miracle. I would have missed that because what I found through that was that God really did love me. God really did care. And I believe God has a window. And I believe whenever we do something and the people have gone on before us that we love and miss and we feel like maybe things aren't right or whatever it is. I think that every time we're in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous or we're doing something or we're setting up chairs or something, I think God says, come here. And he calls them over to the window. And he says, look down there. Look at him. He's setting up chairs. You know, look at her. She's over there working with a newcomer. You know, I really believe that. I really believe that. And I think that can be for everybody here. And I want to thank you once again for having me.
hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.